Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing. Always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true transparency pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Got our man David Beauclair in the house with us this hour from the Nashville Post, presented by the Tennessee Lottery. Tennessee Lottery proud to have raised over $4.5 billion for education in Tennessee. He's educated. What's going on, David?
Not a lot. I enjoyed the conversation with Jimmy Hyams last hour. I laughed, Blaine, when you asked about Phil Fulmer, because that was the first thing I thought when I saw that.
Yeah, Mark laughed at me.
Well, not that he could be chancellor, but any role he might have played in this, because as we all know, Phil Fulmer was was special senior advisor to the president for last year up until December 1st when he was named athletics director, and I just can't help but think that Phil is cleaning house over there. He's just pulling some strings.
I don't know how Wack and Davenport helps him.
I don't think he probably has anything to do with her, but if for some reason he didn't like her, and if he blames her for bringing John Curry back to campus and all this, I have a hard time thinking he didn't have anything to say about it. I really do.
Well, he and DiPietro are boys. There's no question about that.
Joe, it's Phil.
I don't know if Fulmer's fingerprints are on this one, though.
I don't know if they're fully on it, but I think he might have had at least
Fulmer right now. But Fulmer right now is in a really good place. You know, he's viewed as the knight in shining armor, the guy who came in to save the day.
And what better time to start throwing your clout around?
Right. Because this lady didn't want him there.
I don't know that it benefits him at all, other than it's something he could do, so he did it. You know, Phil Fulmer likes to throw his, he did it with Johnny. Like Phil likes the power play. That's what I'm saying. Phil Fulmer likes the power play, and when Phil has the power, he will throw it around, and there is no more powerful person in Knoxville right now than Phil Fulmer. He has put everybody at ease in the Big Orange Nation. Everybody's happy. I mean, you see him being quoted almost every single day somewhere, showing up on the radio, doing, like, he is having a good time being back and being in charge right now.
You're making him sound like Tony Soprano in Orange.
I think so.
Gotta get out there on the streets there, Mark.
All right, Bulk, you're my neighbor. You're my Bulky. You're my neighbor. You're my good friend and all that. And I haven't had a chance to talk to you since the Predators Game 3 loss.
Woo!
Do you believe in certain circumstances, it's not just losing, but how you lose, and how that Game 3 implosion, that's what I'm calling it, could affect things moving forward?
I do, and as you look at where the series stands right now, and I wrote this yesterday on the Nashville Post, you know, in the big picture, being down 2-1 in a series is not a big deal. Happens all the time. Teams come back from 2-1 down. But when you have lost two games that you should have won, not could have, but should have won. I mean, you game one, you have more shots at the end of the first period than your opponent has the entire game. You dominate puck possession throughout. You do all the things you want to do, and you end up losing 4-1. That's a bad loss. You go on the road, you go up 3-0 at the end of the first period. 3-0. And it's funny because you say, Winnipeg scored a couple of empty net goals, so the final score looked worse than it was, which is true. But 7-4 kind of felt like what that game should have been by when all was said and done. I mean, they got outplayed so badly after the first period. I don't know how you think you're going to win three of the next four if you've already blown two chances to win this thing. The Preds, They're in a bad spot. This is about the worst 2-1 down I've ever seen.
To me, what scares me the most is that Laine hasn't scored yet.
Yeah.
You know, on 17 shots. Winnipeg could be getting Matthew Perreault back. He's their best sort of bottom six forward. He would be the center for the third line. You look at all of that, and yeah, that to me could make it infinitely tougher on the Predators, even if they do play well tonight.
And the flip side of your question about how you win, how you do things, what about the decision of Paul Maurice not to pull Connor Hellebuyck after the first period, and how good does Connor Hellebuyck feel right now as opposed to if he had been pulled from that game and what that means for this series going forward?
It really is an interesting question because the Predators, one of those shots at the end of the first or early second go in, Hellebuck's probably out of the game right there.
Yeah.
But as it is, he stays in. He probably feels a renewed sense of confidence after, you know, a shaky start and good shape.
Yeah, it's that's what I say. This is, I mean, there's always going to be a game or two in a seven game series where you say, you know, that's one we could have had or whatever. And that's fine. But these are two games the Predators should have won. I mean, they should have. They're starting to really look like a tired team. Like I don't know if it's more physically tired from the fact that they've played a lot of hockey. They had a long season last year, or if it's, and I think this is more likely the case, it's mentally tired that they're, you know, the burden of expectation is a beast that people don't talk about a whole lot, but
it's something this franchise hasn't had to this extent
never had. I mean, it was all fun and games last year when you go into the playoffs as the number 8 seed, the last team to qualify, you sweep Chicago in the first round, woohoo, let's go, let's roll, you know. And I mean Predators have had something to lose now for a long time, and if you don't know how to, if you're not used to dealing with that, it can wear on you. And I think maybe that's what's happening.
So the burden of expectations is kind of wearing on them. You may be right on that, but you know, Mark threw out a theory earlier today, and that they may change some of the lineups, even in Pekka-Rinne. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't see Pekka being sat down at all.
He's just shaking it up.
I understand the thinking, but I think that's something you think about for about a second and a half and say, no, we're not doing that. But yeah, I have no doubt that Peter Laviolette's going to do something different with the lineups tonight. I'm wondering, you know, it's a little thing, but does Yannick Weber get back in there? And, I mean, he was a part of the playoff run last year. Do you put Weber and Irwin back together, or does Weber and Emelin make sense in some way? I don't know. I thought it was really fascinating. In game two here, Peter Laviolette almost ignored the third defense pairing most of that night. Like the second period, they played about 2.5 minutes total between the two of them. Irwin played less than a minute in that period, and I think you know, we didn't see much of that at all last year. I think that's, you know, that's part of the burden of expectation too. That look, we've got to do this. We've got to count on our best guys, and you know, the top four we know is plenty good enough, and those guys are being asked to do a little bit more right now.
David, Mark brought this up earlier. Any chance he mixes up the defense pairings of those top two? You know, he's usually pretty rock solid on keeping those guys together. Any chance he shakes that up a bit, Peter Laviolette?
It's a good question. It certainly, it certainly makes sense to try whatever you can try at this point. I mean that means what, putting Josi and Subban together, and you know, they've tried that briefly a couple of times, you know, starting with early last season. I think what they lasted about 2.5 games at the start of last season.
They're sort of the same kind of defenseman.
I mean, I don't know. It's worth trying. And certainly most of his lineup moves he made last playoff run worked. So if he does it, you have reason to believe it'll work. I mean, if you're the players, you have reason to buy in and say, okay, yeah, let's do this. But
a couple of things, Buck, I wanted to throw at you. You know, first of all, Pekka's, I don't want to say diminished play, but disappointing play. At times, he has sort of reverted back to what, you know, to the goaltender he was in previous years in terms of being a little too hyper, getting caught out of the net. That is not a lot of what we saw this year when he made his big adjustment. Now, he had a great postseason last year. So, you know, so that's not to say that the way he played was all that, or the form that he played with was not all that terrible. But I think a lot of this is a reaction to the poor play by the D-Cor in the defensive end. And, you know, he's not getting the support he usually does. I think what Winnipeg has done in terms of, you know, their horizontal passing, you know, going from side to side in the offensive zone and creating great angles for their shooters has really caused Pekka, you know, a lot of trouble going from post to post. And, you know, that has been one of the keys to their offensive success, you know, being able to make that pass, you know, on the weak side or the other side where that shooter, you know, usually has an open opportunity.
I go back to what I said about the burden of expectations, and I think Peck is guilty of this, and I think everybody pretty much on this team is guilty of this right now. Everybody's trying to do just a little too much.
I think you
saw it in particularly in the first game. You know, it's almost like guys were skating a little too hard and they over pursued by a step or so, and they opened the lane for those cross ice passes you're talking about. Pekka is reaching a little too far for a puck that maybe he shouldn't be reaching for. He should stay back in. You know, the Forsberg shot in game one is one that comes to mind when he had the wide open net on the one timer. You know, it's almost like he tried to put that through the back of the net rather than just put it in the net. You know, it's almost like everybody's turned up to 11 right now, and if they just dial it back to 10, they would be all right. And you know, maybe it just takes another win to put everybody at ease right now, but that's what it looks like to me, and Pekka might be chief among that in terms of trying to do too much. And you think back to game two when he gave up the third goal in that one, where he was, you know, a scramble play, exactly what you're talking about, Mark, and he was kind of in a funny position, and the puck goes in, he's down on his knees, and he just dropped his head on the, like, I can't remember Pekka Rinne just so openly showing that sort of emotion in the middle of a game like that, where you're that sort of dismay, where, you know, oh God, he was just crestfallen for a moment there. And I just think that speaks to that fact that everybody's, you know, everybody needs to just remember what their job is, do their jobs. And, you know, it was good enough to be the best team in the regular season. You know, trust that it's going to be good enough to keep you going in the playoffs.
Last year, the Predators got through the playoffs, and one of the chief reasons was shutting down the other team's first line. It started in the Blackhawks series, you know, where the Patrick Kane line got absolutely nothing. You know, second, it happened in St. Louis, where the Jaden Schwartz, you know, line, Tereschenko line did nothing against them. And even, you know, against Anaheim, they kept their big guns. They kept Corey Perry and Getzlaff, you know, pretty much subdued, and they made it all the way to the final. Well, this is not the case in this series. Their first line has been, you know, absolutely spectacular, whether it's, you know, Kyle Connor, Scheifele, and Wheeler, or, you know, it doesn't really matter whether it's Ehlers on that left wing or Kyle Connor. Winnipeg has gotten maximum production from their first line, and that's been one of the keys for them.
It just proves what a magical run last season was. You know, when you think about the fact that they were never down in a series until they lost at Pittsburgh in game one. I mean, the NHL playoffs are really, really hard, and the Predators made it look really, really easy for most of last year. And you know, everybody sort of immediate after the Pittsburgh series, everybody sort of immediately turned, you know, I'm guilty of this too. You immediately turn your attention to this year and you start thinking, what's it going to take to get back, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think anybody took enough time to really appreciate what that team accomplished last year and the struggles they're facing right now. This is more common of what it takes to get through the NHL playoffs. And you know, I'm not saying they're done, because this series has been completely unpredictable to me as it is right now. But I think I said on here late in the regular season, I want to see this team be put in a tough situation. You know, if they're as great as we think they are, you know, a really tough situation will bring out a team's greatness. And there was nothing in the regular season that ever really challenged this team. Now they're in that tough situation. Let's see what this bunch is really made of. This could be their moment.
And the life raft that Preds fans and many of us hang on to is during the regular season, after bad losses, regardless of the opposition, whether it was Tampa Bay, you know, whether it was the Washington Caps or whatever, they would come up with a good performance and win. They're 3-0 after losses in this postseason. So now we'll see again if they can get off the mat. You're right. They are totally capable of doing that. But in this series, the difference between 2-2 and 3-1, I said, was as wide as the Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
You just don't want to be down 3-1 to this Winnipeg team.
And yeah, I mean, let's not forget this was the second best team in the regular season. I mean, this is not an accident either. This is a really good, well constructed team that is not afraid of Nashville, that does not have to adjust its game to sort of play against Nashville. They can do what they do and feel confident about it. And if Nashville can get a win tonight, then things will be really, really exciting. I think we're in for a 7-game series, and it'll be a hell of a 7 games.
Anything on Cale Yarncroak? You guys hear anything on him, on whether you think we might see him tonight or out, or just any sort of feel for that situation?
I have, you know, not being in Winnipeg, I have not heard anything. I mean, I assume he's still battling whatever he was battling late in the season, and
that dreaded upper body injury.
Yeah, you know, right. he's a guy who hasn't contributed much on the scoreboard, but we all know he's a very useful player for this team, and one you'd like to have in there if you can.
Going back to the game three and kind of a controversial spot there, what did you think about the helmet coming loose for Pekka and just whether they should have stopped it or not?
Yeah,
or
I mean,
what the officials
was,
are doing,
I mean,
right,
it was,
there?
It was clear he was signaling, you know, and he didn't do enough to get the ref's attention. I thought Brian Boucher on the broadcast said, you know, at some point just throw your helmet off then. Yeah. You know, you do what you have to do to get the referee's attention. You know, there's a lot going on. I don't know what referees are trained to look at or what, but I'm assuming that keeping one eye on the goalie is not high on their priority list with what's going on with the other 10 skaters out there on the ice.
There is quite a bit happening at any given time.
But one of the things that Peter Laviolette addressed was the question of the lack of discipline. You know, the 4 penalties they took in the third period, the 3 they took, you know, in the last 8 minutes, which strangled them in terms of trying to come back in that game. And Laviolette said it's been addressed before. Is this sort of one of these things we've got to accept with the Predators as just, you know, part of their DNA and live with it? Or is it something that really needs to be focused on as they go into game 4 tonight?
It was a factor in the Colorado series, too. It's, you know, this is the team that led the NHL in penalties during the regular season. They played 88, 91 games now. This is what this team is. They take a lot of penalties. You know, again, I go back to maybe the expectations that guys are a little more on edge and can't, you know, it's not as much all fun and games out there as what it was. So they lose their minds a little bit more often and do some dumb things. And that certainly seemed like the case on Tuesday night at times.
I think you gave us your prediction there, Bokey, on this series or against the Jets. I just can't recall. I mean, how do you see this series playing out?
I will say that going into the playoffs, I never thought the Predators were going to get past the second round. And I had said down the stretch, I thought Minnesota was the team you didn't want to play. When Ryan Suter got hurt, that changed my opinion. But on the NHL.com bracket game, I had the Predators losing to Winnipeg in 6 in this round. So,
and you're still sticking by that after 3 games?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you look, there are so few teams that get back to the Stanley Cup final 2 years in a row. And almost none of the teams that lost do it. If you know, if you have a better chance of getting back there,
they alone had the best record, right?
Win. Yeah, and yeah, then there's the President's Trophy thing. There's, you know, there's all that. I go back to I sit on here and I wrote it a few weeks back, whatever, or a few months back when the Preds had their 10-game winning streak. That you have to go back to 2014 to find the last time a team had a 10-game win streak in the regular season and got past the first round of the playoffs. We say, well, great, the Predators did it this year. Well, guess what? Colorado also had a 10-game win streak in the regular season this year. So, you know, one of those teams was going to do it this year. But the NHL seems to be a league where, and the Predators proved this last year, it's when you play your best. And
so did they peak too soon?
Yes, I think you can make that argument. I absolutely do think you can make that argument that they were too good too soon. And now they've sort of come back to the norm while other teams are playing their best right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Vegas is the one you keep waiting for. Like, when are those guys going to settle down? But, I mean, they're in a dogfight now, too.
Oh, they're settling down.
Yeah, that's Iggy's favorite
What about the second line, the tourist line? Yeah, they produced the game winner in game two, but they've done little else in this playoff.
They played better in game one than they did at any time in the Colorado series. I thought they took a step back again in game two, and they were, I thought they were sort of non-existent most of that game. And like the Fiala, the game winner, that to me, that was a perfect example of why Kevin Fiala frustrates me. When Craig Smith got that puck and started up ice, you could literally see Kevin Fiala come to life. He knew at the Nashville blue line that he had an opportunity to score a goal. And that guy loves to score goals, and he can score goals. Make no mistake about it, and that was a perfect example. But he is so less interested in the other parts. Like, you compare the rest of his game with the way Victor Arvidsson or Philip Forsberg or Mike Fisher or Roman Josi or Ryan Ellis or any, you know, guys who are so into every aspect of the game. Fiala is not that way, and that's what just it drives me crazy about him. But you know, you're sure as hell happy to have him on the ice at that particular moment, and the fact that he, you know, he has enough hockey sense, he recognized, what was it, 70 feet away, that this is a scoring opportunity. I gotta skate like I can really skate, like I haven't skated for much of this game to this point.
Many believed that Elli Tolvanen would be the final piece of the puzzle. He's not even mentioned now as a nuclear option.
There was never a chance he was going to be a big contributor to this team in the playoffs. It was this was all about signing Tolvanen was all about next season and getting him here, giving him a couple games to get a sense of what the NHL was about. But no, it's too big an adjustment. He's too young. He's not strong enough. The NHL playoffs are not a time for a kid like that to come in and try to find his way.
Other issue, you know, just around the league that I find interesting. You look at Las Vegas. Who's their biggest star right now?
Carlson.
Okay. Where was Carlson last year? He's buried on the fourth line in Columbus.
Columbus, yeah.
He never showed any signs that he would be a 40-goal scorer. Do you think teams will now look maybe a little bit differently on those fringe guys in hope maybe that they can find the next Wild Bill Carlson?
You know, everybody's looking for that. The Preds back, you know, back in 98, 99, that was David Poile's battle cry. We're going to give guys opportunities they never had and hope, you know, we assume some of them are going to, and they've never had a 40-goal scorer. I mean, it's, you know, they're still looking for those kinds of guys. I mean, everybody's going to be looking for the next William Carlson. I don't think it's reasonable to say somebody's going to find a guy like that every year. It's a really unique situation. What about Blake Wheeler, by the way, taking a shot at
the fans.
Nashville's, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The old piping in noise.
A little our crowd noise is from the crowd. It's not from speakers or music or live bands or whatever, he said.
Yeah, we
talked about that for a whole hour the other day, man.
I like our speakers and music and live bands.
I mean, there's no doubt the Predators have turned the music up louder in the playoffs.
Yes, there's no doubt about
that. I can tell you, sitting in the press box, when the music is playing, my computer is literally bouncing on my desk. It did not happen during the regular season. But to suggest that Nashville's crowd doesn't make a lot of noise. Now, I told you going up there that people, you know, Winnipeg's just as good an atmosphere. People are very loud up there, and I would expect the Jets players to be proud of their fans too. But I think that was unnecessary, but okay.
Mm-hmm. Whatever, Blake.
Yeah, that was a pot shot, man. After
that was that. I mean, yeah. I mean, he didn't say Nashville, but you know, live music. Let's be honest about what we're talking
Maybe
about.
Maybe if I had any bands up there, you could have a stage for them.
That's right.
Canada only has two rock bands. David, what'd you think about the Titans draft? You know, it's been said a lot, but quality over quantity, I guess, was the thought in trading up a couple times to get guys that really wanted for the defense.
Yeah, I continue to be fascinated by John Robinson's approach and how he makes it work, and that he's not sitting there at 25 saying, who do I think I can get here? He looks at the draft, says, who do I want, and where do I need to be to get him? And from that perspective, I have no complaints about ending up with only four picks. If I mean a really good draft class is you're only going to get. I mean, you're happy if you get three, maybe four useful players. But if you get three really good players out of a draft class, that's a really good. That's a really good draft class most times, and it's when the Seahawks hit on like seven that one year or whatever it was with Sherman and when it's Sherman and Chancellor and all those guys that's when you become a Super Bowl winner. But if these guys, if the top three are the guys that the Titans think they are, where Evans is a starter this year, Landry's a starter next year, and Cruikshank becomes a starter by his fourth year, that's a win. That makes this a really good class.
Now, did you think he should have maybe, saved out on a little bit on one more pick, or you just feel like he went after his guys and he rolled the dice?
You know, he talks about it before the draft every year too, about gathering intelligence and knowing, it's not just what guy I want, it's what other teams will want this guy, and making sure you get up ahead of that, ahead of those teams. So however he does that, who he talks to, whatever network of spies or moles or whatever it was he has, he felt like he had to make the moves he made. So and even with the
did you thought they would find somebody else though? I mean, another position, maybe that they may have needed.
I thought they were gonna add a wide receiver in the draft. Mm. I thought they, almost every team wants to add a cornerback or two every year in the draft. They didn't do that. Those are the big things I think you end up a little short on. But the Harold Landry thing was interesting. I asked him.
No, after, Honor Landry.
Vince, yeah.
Yes, Vince Young called him.
Oh, Lord.
we'll talk about that after this question.
I asked John Robinson after that pick. I said, was it a case of you started making calls before, during the day, Friday in advance of the second round, trying to move up, or did it get to a point where, he had fallen X number of picks and you say, well, he's still on the board, let's go get him. And he said, no, we were making calls all day. Like, that was his sole focus going into round two, was to go get Harold Landry. He even said, it's funny to hear a GM talk about mock drafts, but he even said it. If you looked at all of the mock drafts were out there, probably what, 85% of them had the Titans with either Evans or Landry, and he goes and gets both of them. That's pretty bold right there.
feels like he's got a two first rounders, really. Yeah. And the only reason why, you know, Landry probably wouldn't start an issue is because of the two veteran guys that's out there. But he'll get a lot of playing time. But what did you think about B.Y. and the honor Landry?
Oh, I just
Honor Landry.
That guy. I mean, why he would? I mean, I know. Like somebody said to me, you know, Vince always plays well in Texas, and you know, the fans were gonna react to him. But you know,
he did a great job up to that point.
I want to know who picked Vince Young to what is it about Vince Young that people have good feelings, or, you know, other than how well he played his rookie year, but Vince Young isn't representative of the Tennessee Titans in any way, shape, or form that I think of. I mean,
he was a first rounder, and he's from, you know, Texas, so Texas, it was in Dallas.
I mean, and then to make matters worse, you end up trading away the third round pick. So Wesley Woodyard, who is an awesome human being and a, you know, off the best season of his career as a player for this team, is down there scheduled to read the third round pick. He doesn't get to do anything, you know. I mean, I thought it was a disaster when I heard Vince was going to be reading the pick. It turned out to be an even bigger disaster than I imagined. Yeah.
Honor Landry.
He didn't have Kevin Mawai to whisper in his ear.
Yeah,
not
exactly.
Honor. It's Harold.
And you know, good for Landry too, for kind of laughing it off and not making a big deal out of it.
Especially when he knows he has a nickname for life now.
Oh yeah, that'll never go away.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Locker room is going to
come. Honor, let's go get some coffee.
When you do your first interview with him, make sure you ask him about Honor Landry. How does he like his nickname?
Let's go back to the phones here. Chuck, good morning. You're on the Zone.
Hey guys, I just want to ask Dave Beauclair a question about the Predators. Seems to me, I don't know if they've peaked as much as they become the hunted instead of the hunter. Last year they were the hunters and they were aggressive and going after things, and now they're kind of trying to keep from losing. Now, we need the Pekka that says, this is my goal, you're not getting in tonight to win this game tonight.
Yeah, I think that's part of the whole burden of expectations thing, that you know, they're the team, everybody's going to give them their best shot right now, and, you know, everybody's going to get really up to play them. I think that's part of it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. What do you think, real quick before we let you go, as with Henry, you think he's going to be the bell cow? You think he's the future bell cow for the Titans at running back?
Well, I mean, he's the guy, but it's interesting. He said on the caravan stop this week, he sort of gave a little sneak peek into the playbook and said that Matt LaFleur is going to do as much as he can to get the ball in Marcus Mariota's hands as much as possible, or something to that effect. That basically, you know, whereas the last couple of years the offense has been built around the run game, mm-hmm. you know, now we're getting to the quarterback centric. Here it is. His quote was, "Coach LaFleur has a lot of ideas about how to get the ball to our playmakers. He is going to utilize Marcus as much as he can because Marcus is a great quarterback. It's a different scheme, but I feel like we are adjusting to it well." So I think, you know, no more protecting Marcus, try to take the load off Marcus. It's Marcus, here you go. So we'll see.
Give me the keys.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if that means, I mean, we all know, we've talked about when he was hired, Matt LaFleur likes the play action and whatnot. You got to have the big run game to do that, or at least the threat of a run game. That's Derrick Henry. So yeah, I think Derrick Henry's going to do, he's going to have plenty of work this year.
Lots of schemes when David Beauclair is in the house. Thanks, man. Have a good week.
All right. Everybody do the same. We'll see.